Welcome to Fear the Boot, the only show on the internet dedicated to slut-shaming Pat. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
Slut-shaming.
This is Julia.
I am Pat.
And I am Chris.
There's no shaming, Pat.
No.
There is no shaming, Pat.
First off, this is a bonus episode. If you don't know what that means, welcome to Fear the Boot, for real, because you may be new to the show. A bonus episode is a show where we talk about things outside of gaming, just kind of random whatnots in our lives. If you're new to the show, we recommend you check out another episode first. These are not on the usual subject that we do. Now, if you're a show veteran, you probably noticed that a bonus episode has intro music now. And I would like to thank Nick, one of our listeners, for providing that intro music. We kind of tried to think where we put this music. We realized the bonus episodes don't have a theme. So we're going to try giving them one and see how that works.
It's got a good beat. I can dance to it.
Alrighty. A couple things I want to knock out here real quick before we get down to this bonus episode. First off, if you are a listener to Happy Jacks, I want to do a little bit of a service for another show. Ever since DLI disappeared, well, effectively disappeared, Stu has been kind enough to take over my laundry and lawn mowing. So in return, I want to let you know about a little problem they're having. If you are subscribed to their show and have suddenly stopped getting episodes, that's because their feed changed and not all the aggregators updated correctly. So if you're not getting episodes of Happy Jacks, then you just need to go out and get that new feed. I will put a link in the show notes you can click on to a post by Stu that contains their show feeds.
Yeah, they didn't pod fade like DLI or anything.
Second off, I want to give my congrats to Jake and Eric. Back in episode 295, we mentioned that Jake was going to be getting a liver transplant from his brother Eric. And I'm happy to say that that surgery succeeded. They pulled through, recovered great, and they're doing well. So that's obviously awesome.
How many do you have in your mouth right now, Dan? You're having a little bit of trouble there.
Chris, I literally nearly died this weekend. You should know that because you commented on the Facebook post where I was talking about that.
I did
comment quite a few because they're choking him to death.
I don't know. How many penises does it take to drop your blood pressure and put you into hyponatremia?
47.
Thank you, Wayne.
He's got that precise number.
It's a Clerks reference.
I thought you were doing a Louis reference. Excellent.
No, it was a Clerks reference.
Oh, Clerks reference.
47, dude.
Original Clerks.
I thought she was like 70 or 80
Shouldn't
or 90.
Left you
I don't know.
Without a dope beat to step two. Sorry.
So, last off, postcard winners. Of the five shows that ran the postcard stuff, I want you to know that we only actually got contacted directly by three of the people that won. You three folks, I have your name and contact information. I apologize for having not followed up with you up to this point. Long story short, as I've gone through some transitions in my work life and whatnot, so I am going to be getting in touch with you. We will get those prizes fulfilled. Just bear with me a little longer. I've not forgotten you. I do still intend to follow up on that. Like I said, I've just had some things in my life throw me off on my ability to fulfill some of those prizes. All right, all that out of the way, let's get down to it. Get yourself tucked into bed, turn the lights down low, and it ain't just for my voice and whatever you think Julia looks like. It is today, it is because we are doing bedtime stories. So we want to lull you slow and deep into an easy sleep.
I like the way you said that. That was
if
nice
you could only put a facial expression on a podcast.
Pat, it's a podcast, not a video.
I was just waiting for the inevitable from Chris, and he didn't do it. I'm shocked.
Do what?
Exactly.
So, Pat, I'm actually going to start off.
I'm going to start this?
Yes.
We started with Chris last
because
time.
You
I didn't feel like going first. Pat, you go first.
But
you
then Pat would have to put down his phone.
Yeah,
I'll
know.
I'll put my phone down. It's fine.
It'd be like getting John to put down whatever rule book he's reading and not
I'm good.
Through the show for.
He was looking at porn. It's fine.
No, it wasn't, actually. I don't know what I was doing.
So, it's okay. This entire episode is about dating and relationships and pickups and that's the topic of our bedtime stories.
Boy, girl, how's that?
Yeah, if we had not already done a 50 Shades of Grey pun, that would probably be the title of this episode. But we've already done that for the 50 Shades of Wayne because of the damn soap baby.
Creepy.
I have so many soap babies now.
Yeah, yes, you got nine or 10 of them at the con.
So for anyone that wasn't at Fear the Con, Lunar and her husband came up with this idea after listening to the soap baby episode. That they were going to go out, buy some soap, personally carve these soap babies, and leave them around the con. Well, when they brought this up to some people, other people at the con loved the idea. So before I know it, I'm at the con. Every time I turn around, there's a new soap baby sitting there.
No, actually, it was a project. When they came up with the idea, what we did was we ended up getting soap from, I don't know if it was Walgreens or where we got it from. And it was kind of an on and off project throughout the tourism week.
It grew past this, though. After the first day, I come in and there's hotel bar soap there, too. The tiny little round one, the tiny little square one,
creamies,
personally carved. So, yeah, I went home with a box of 9 soap babies, and one went missing.
Yeah, it was the painted one,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, the fully painted one.
Fully painted, or I don't know, it was markers or how someone they colored it.
It was paint. It was my brother's.
They find a soap carcass somewhere in a dish in a bathroom.
Your brother's soap baby was the creepiest of them all.
Yeah, he
because when
it.
You set it there, it looked like the eyes were following you.
Oh, they were, Wayne. They're saying it was this
they were
was
saying,
the grown up
marry
this
me.
This was the grown up soap baby that you abandoned well, yeah, so you many years ago.
So then you have Sarah sitting at the front table, surrounded by these soap babies, and she's like, can't you just keep it in your pants? Stop fornicating with soap.
No.
Well, see, and the funny thing with my brother is he's my brother and he doesn't listen to the show, so I actually had to tell him the joke behind it, and then he still loved it so much he did it anyway.
That's awesome.
So, Pat, my question for you is I want you to tell me about your nuclear football for the next generation.
Okay. And this story has nothing to do with the main topic of what this episode is about
perfect
dating and boys and girls. But anyway.
No, it has nothing to do with human sexuality at all.
Well, it has
all.
Something to do with human sexuality, but not with dating.
Well, we're a PG-13 show. I, you know, couldn't. Go okay. on. Yeah. What do dating and relationships lead up to? Maybe children. Why? How do children get made?
This is so awkward. It's so awkward to transition into it. What he's referencing is that I don't remember how this came up, but when I was in Scouts, there was 4 or 5 of us that were all about the same age in our troop. I wasn't the first one. Actually, Keith Carlson was the first one who did it. He started bringing a briefcase with all of his like Scout stuff to the Scout meetings. So he started carrying this like it was, you know, he had a nice one. It was like the Samsonite briefcase. So he did that. And then, of course, 3 or 4 of us, we all followed suit. And so we all had briefcases. So we were like the briefcase gang. You know, at that point, we were sort of the leaders. We were the youth leaders of in the troop. And we had, so we all had our briefcases. I had my handbook in it, my neckerchief, the stuff that I wear. I was actually, you know, the stuff that I needed to wear at meetings and whatever was in there. But then eventually there were other things that started to go in there as well that were equally important to scouting and to growing up as a young man. And yes, I'm talking about my prized issues of boys' life. And I was going to say, most people will get that reference. Those of you around the mics may not. I'm not sure if you understand what that means, but we'll get to it later. This briefcase, it went everywhere, not just to the scout meetings. Like literally we started taking these things with us on campouts as well. Like when we go camping, brought the briefcase because it's got my scout in it. But anyway, the important thing is that I had a stash of Boys Life magazines in my briefcase. Okay. For those of you who just don't get it, I had porn. Okay. Boys Life is code for Playboy. Okay.
Boys Life is the official magazine of the Boy Scouts of America.
You know, I don't know if it still is anymore. At that time it was, I don't know if it still exists.
So
it may or may not, but
it really
yes.
is a
legitimate magazine,
yes. non-pornographic, whatever. And if you were to tell someone in the Boy Scouts that you have an issue of Boys Life in the briefcase, then they would think nothing of it. But when in truth, what you have in there are issues
right.
of Playboy, Penthouse, Hustler, whatever.
Exactly. Yes. Continue.
Boys Life magazine, by the way, does still exist.
Does it really? Okay.
It does.
I haven't,
I'm
obviously.
Looking at it right now.
I did have a subscription back when I was like a teenager, but I haven't seen it since. I graduated.
I'm looking at the website,
the
and there's a boy holding an issue of Boys Life magazine, and on the cover it says "Going Deep."
That is outstanding.
Only,
so go on, Pat.
Only Chris.
Go on.
So anyway, I had the stash of pornography that was in my briefcase, and now I still have my briefcase. It's at home in my parents' house in my bedroom closet. My scout shirts are hanging in the closet, and literally underneath them, my briefcase is sitting on the floor of the closet in there with it. And at one point, Beth was like looking through my closet. She goes like, what the hell is this? Like, what is this briefcase? So I said, well, it's my scout briefcase. So she's like, well, what do you have in it? I mean, what were you doing? So I said, well, I open it up and, you know, there's all kinds of, I mean, I've got, it's great. I've got my, I have my handbooks in there because there's two or three handbooks that you need as a Boy Scout. I've got two or three knives,
a bottle of lotion, some Kleenex.
No, no, that's, I don't use lotion. That's
I always thought that was stupid, by the way. Amateurs,
good Lord.
Yeah, really.
You know, I've got all the typical, you know, stuff that a boy in Scouts will have, you know, weapons of destruction of, you know, some sort. And then she's like, she's looking through and she like pulls back one of the file areas and she's like, what the hell is this? And she, you know, she pulls out my stash of porn. I'm like, oh yeah, that's my pornography. So she's like, you have pornography in your briefcase? I'm like, yeah, that's where I stashed it. Yeah, it was a great place to stash. And she was like appalled, of course. So that's the background. But the story comes out about this. She says something to this group of people, and they all latch onto it like this is some crazy thing that, you know, a teenage boy would have pornography stashed somewhere. But anyway, that's beside the point. But what it gets to is it got us to this whole notion of a pornography nuclear football. I'm going to credit you with that. And I think you probably, I vaguely remember the conversation.
It emerged from a conversation I was having with John. I don't remember if he coined it or I coined it, but one of the two of us coined it in that conversation.
And John's not here, so you get full credit.
Yeah, so it's mine.
But basically what it gets down to is what has happened now through the generations. Like, because I was a child of the 70s and 80s. I grew up through that time period, obviously before the internet, because now we know, of course, the internet is for porn almost exclusively. Say what you will, it's for porn. Okay.
And shopping.
Yes, and you shop for porn.
I don't.
Yes, you do. Everything you do on the internet,
sorry,
is related to porn in some way. I guarantee
you.
Anyway,
what?
Sorry, Kate.
Oh,
so it's everywhere now, and I was sort of, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, in my day, it wasn't like that.
Yeah,
you had to go out into the woods and look for somebody else's stash.
I remember the first time I actually was I was walking down the street and I literally stumbled upon a video cassette of porn on the side of the road.
Yeah.
I picked this thing up and squirreled it away like a motherfucking treasure. Like it might as well have been a gold bar.
But of course,
I couldn't take it home with me. I had to stash the thing in the woods because I'm like, what am I going to do with this?
Oh, I not only took it home, we've talked around to all the other kids about my age, and we found who had two VCRs in their house.
Yes. Oh, so, you made copies. Oh, right.
The person with two copies. VCRs, nice. He was golden. Everyone would bring their videos that they got to him so he could make copies.
For this thing, I remember it because it was not only, it wasn't just a bare tape. It was like the tape in the box. It was in its own box.
Oh, wow. It wasn't like a...
No, it wasn't just like a copy. It was the real, it was the, you know, original
thing. It was
thing.
The movie.
Not only that, it had an insert. So here's what I did. I remember the insert was a booklet. It was like a stapled booklet. It was like 5 or 6 pages long. I couldn't take the tape home. I had to leave it in the box, like buried in the woods. But I took that insert. I folded it up and I kept it in my wallet. And I would literally, I would pull it out and I could pull it out at will and show people. It's like, yeah, open it, you know, unfold it and show it up. Cause it was like, it was a collection of all the people that were on the tape and the scenes and everything, like little pictures of it. It was great.
I remember those days.
I still got that somewhere. I mean, somewhere buried in a drawer. I have this thing.
All right, so start connecting the dots. But today people have the internet, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. So you don't have this. You don't have this discovery, this rite of passage, this, you know, the oncoming of manhood.
Yeah. Never again will you have a kid flipping through a medical book. Ooh, boobs.
Well, exactly. You know, they're not looking at the Sears catalog and, you know, for Chris, they're not looking at the, you know, the cave paintings or the Sears catalog later on. And then the Victoria's Secret catalogs. Good Lord. Victoria's Secret, gosh. back in the 90s, holy shit.
Frederick's of Hollywood.
Frederick's of Hollywood.
Actually, Frederick's better anyway because they're more those. Risque.
I disagree with you on that one. I think back in the late 80s or the 90s, Victoria's Secret ones were better because they were far more risque as far as the soft corness of it would go. I mean,
to Frederick's, though.
Yeah, Frederick's had interesting outfits and stuff like that, the things that were going on in the Victoria's Secret.
That's the problem. I remember back when Victoria's Secret catalogs first started coming out, it was only lingerie. Only. You had a catalog that was 20 or 30 pages long. The whole fucking thing was chicks and the lingerie. Now, they don't even have lingerie in the fucking magazine. You get this thing, it's like, it's like,
what are you looking at?
It's like, it's a magazine of, oh, look, here's full shirts and pants and maybe a swimsuit or two here and there, but then there's like maybe one page of lingerie in the back.
You're not
like,
looking in the right section.
What, you're a lingerie store, and now all I'm seeing is it's like a JCPenney's catalog without the bra section.
Yeah. Well, that's because you can go on the internet and look at it.
Exactly, the internet. So, so you don't have this thing, and you're not ever going to experience that. These were rites of passage. This is part of your growing up and coming into manhood.
A kid, and they don't have this these days. We'll never be sitting there watching for a half hour as the picture finally downloads.
Oh yeah.
And be like, please be boobs. Please be boobs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Please don't be a penis. And please don't be like a penis.
Said on here before, that's nothing compared to when I first started. When I got to that point, when it would download line by line, I was in heaven, okay? When I first started, I had to go on the billboards.
That's where I started.
The BBSs. Oh, yeah. And all download binaries, like the two files
and then combine
and
them.
Then you encode the f***ing things together and then see what it was. So all you you had a one line description on the BBS that said this. You would type in the code to download that file based on what it said, and then you download it for 10 minutes.
Well, and then you
encode the thing together. Then you could finally open it to see what the it was.
And you'd have to go through and check to see who uploaded it, because some people were the people that would just find the most disgusting things to upload with a really cool name.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people were the people you could trust. So you'd be like, okay, that has a good name, but I don't know if I downloaded something from them.
Yeah, these are the real things. The kids, they don't know how good they've got it these days. But so here's the problem, though. Internet, it's great. Computers, they're fantastic. You've got all this porn. You have access to everything. They love it. These kids, they love it. But what don't you do? But here's the problem. When the power goes out, what are you going to do? You know
exactly.
What?
Exactly.
You're not masturbating to your fucking keyboard and blank monitor. Okay? You lose power, all that wonderful pornography is gone forever. Gone. It's you know what? Your flash drive, your hard drive, good luck masturbating with that. Okay? Yeah, that's great. No power. You're okay.
But Pat, they have laptops with batteries now.
The past 3 minutes of this show sounded like Pat was giving testimony to Congress.
I know, I said it's the most exciting I've ever seen.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah.
I wanted to like stand up and
when
salute
we,
it. Sounds
when
like
we have, when we have the big one.
Should have been playing to that.
When we have the big one and the electricity's gone and then the batteries run out, Wayne, and then you're down to, if you've got a hand crank where you can hand generate the power, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, but you're also wasting your hand.
Exactly. You're wasting your hand.
Exactly.
So
by the time you get
happen,
the power going,
okay?
You're too exhausted
then
to continue.
Then we're f***ed, okay? You're all, nothing. All that, it's all gone. So, that's why we've got the nuclear football, the pornography football. Exactly. We need to make stashes of the good old days, of the physical media, the magazines. You got to put that away. You don't throw it away. You get it and you put it and you hermetically seal that motherfucker so that it's going to be preserved so that, you know, for future generations.
Absolutely.
So that is what we've got to do. It's for the future.
The way John described it to me was more you just wanted that rite of passage. When Duncan turns 13.
That too, 13, yeah. Hold it down. Yeah, hand it down. Well, it's in my will. It's just John will tell you. But in the will, John wrote in the clause that all of my collection goes to Connor because
Pat,
he's
I want
the one
you know,
who will
you're the only person I know
it.
Whose will includes pornography.
You know, I wish my grandfather's did because he had a collection of every Playboy from issue one on until he died.
Well, that's not pornography anymore. That's
exactly. That's my mom and my grandma, when they were going through his stuff, they said this is
trash.
Dirty pornography and threw every one of them in the trash.
Yeah, they have that. Crap!
That's criminal.
She came home and and she's describing it. I'm
you
like,
have like a Marilyn
do you
Monroe
realize
Playboy?
What you did?
Yeah, that's worth a fair amount of
it's
money.
Criminal. Yeah, she had no idea it was worth any money. As far as they were concerned, it's smut. It goes in the trash can. Entire collection. Issue one, the day he died.
I've got to take a minute, people. This has upset me. I don't know if I can go on.
I know. I feel like I should put a cape around your back and try to help you up and walk across the stage or something.
Can't take no more. We'll give Pat a moment to recover. Chris, the t-shirt story.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about telling that one or thinking about telling the... I have a couple interesting fire tower stories as well, and I'm trying
to... Fire tower?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to the fire tower stories. I'm not being patronizing here. Those actually do sound interesting.
Actually, they were.
But the shirt story has got to get told.
All right. So here's basically just to give you a little background on my career, TV station I used to previously work at, I did a number of things before I got into the marketing department there. I worked in primarily in the newsroom in a variety of roles. I was on the technical crew, production assistant. I was a director, as a producer, was a reporter for a little while. And then I was a photographer quite a bit as well. So I'd be out in the field shooting a lot. And it kind of progressed along that trail that most people in small town, small market TV will go through. So at this point in my career, I was a producer. So my shooting days primarily were done. I was done reporting all of that stuff. So I was pretty much in the building every day, all day for my shifts. I didn't really go out in the field anymore. And I kind of had the reputation of, you know, being that guy who always, you know, had wore the real odd or strange statement t-shirts. I had a Mr. Rogers neighborhood sweatshirt for a number of years that I would proudly wore when I was going to work, amongst many others. And so one day, though, it came around that basically it was in the summertime and everybody was out in the field doing stuff. They were out on assignment, basically. So I was basically the only one in the building who had any sort of shooting ability. Well, a shoot came up, there was a scheduling snafu, and there was nobody to go with this reporter to out on this shoot, which was very nearby the station, to go and gather the story, to be the photographer. So I kind of got chosen. And I got up, and I'm getting ready to leave, and I realized suddenly that the shirt that I happened to be wearing that day, and I can't remember what it said on the front of the shirt, but on the back of the shirt were the words...
Before you go to the back of the shirt, you got to give where you're going.
Well, okay. So the shoot was, we had to go, there was some sort of like, either it was an anniversary or a protest or a celebration or something at the local building for women, okay? So this is like your feminist hotspot for the city, all right? This is where, you know, all the empowerment women all hung out, and this is, you know, this is where they got their birth counseling, this is where they got their abortion scheduling, you know, anything that had to do with women's issues, regardless of what they were, was here, okay?
None of those are issues for me. Okay. Anyway...
So whatever stuff you chicks deal with, that's what was going on there, right? So I get stuck to be the photographer for this one. Well, like I said, as I was leaving, I realized the shirt that I had on, like I said, I can't remember what it said on the front, but on the back in like large bold letters, it said across there, "Chicks dig me." So I said to the reporter, I said to her, I said, "You do realize what shirt I've got on?" And she just kind of looked at me and said, you know, "Yep." So there wasn't really much I could do. So here we pull up, and I'm hoping that maybe, you know, we'll be able to get in and get out. And of course, we had to go and interview the woman running the facility, okay? So if there was any, like, some sort of alpha feminist, this was probably the person. So we get there. And, you know, sure enough, there's like a crowd of women outside as well. I think there may have even been some protesters out there. I don't know. There was a large crowd outside. Okay, great. So we're pulling out the gear out of the back of the SUV. And I asked her, I said, "Please just walk behind me, you know, try and, you know, give me some cover as we're going in there." So we successfully navigate through the crowd. We get up, we go into the building. Of course, we have to go into an elevator and... take the elevator up to the top floor, walking past all of these people, the receptionist, all of these people that we're walking past, of course, are also women. We get in the hallway just outside her office, and, you know, the reporter, she looks at me and she says, "Why don't you just stay out here? I'll go get her and we'll interview her in the hallway." And I'm like, "Yes, that sounds like a great idea. Thank you very much." So I'm like setting up my gear and kind of getting in a position, everything, doing my best to keep my face towards her office so that when she comes out, she's not going to see the back of my shirt. Because, of course, the front didn't necessarily reveal anything of what the back might say. So we get this stuff set up. She comes out, you know, we're having this nice cordial conversation, you know, whatever. And we get everything set up. We do the interview, conducting it just fine. And then we finish, and I start to tear down the gear. And of course, the reporter, she's talking to her, but she's kind of like going on a little bit longer than I probably would have wanted her to, you know, because normally they have like their end of the interview conversation, and then they part ways, and then we can all leave. Well, she continues the conversation until I get all the gear packed up. And so, of course, she's standing out in the hallway, then just kind of waiting and watching us leave. Well, the elevator was a good distance down the hallway still. So under any normal circumstances, you would turn around and then leave, you know, just walk towards the elevator, which is exactly what the reporter did that I was with. I, however, because of being very conscious of the whole shirt, I picked up my gear and I walked backwards down the hallway, just kind of maintaining eye contact with her and smiling as she's sitting there wondering, why the hell am I walking backwards while the other the person with me is walking normally?
It's a sign of respect in feudal Japan.
Exactly, exactly. I was making sure that I showed, you know, this broad the proper respect that she deserved.
Oh my god.
So,
cat.
So of course we get the elevator, and then rather than of course just turn and walk into the elevator, I actually had to back in to the elevator, you know, and again, you know, the skirts making contact with me, eye contact with me as we go out there. So we get in the elevator, we get out, I mean, we just get the hell out of there.
Yes, he really did just
call
her the skirt.
Did you just call her the skirt?
I did just call her the skirt.
I was like, I looked at Wayne like, did I hear that right?
Yeah, you heard that right.
So yeah, so we got the hell out of there. Needless to say, I made sure that after, you know, that I started to choose my apparel a bit more wisely, just in case more things like that
Chris,
came. I don't think I ever wore
story.
That shirt again, though.
I don't understand. I mean, I get if you work in a certain environment, you develop a kind of humor that, you know, you recognize in most contexts would be taken as offensive, but I'm not getting debating the appropriateness of that word. But here's the part I don't get. You're going out on this interview. It's not like it's real hard to find places that sell shirts. I mean, especially if you're just being the camera guy. For God's sake, a plain white Hanes undershirt would have worked. Why didn't you stop at, like, a Target, a Walmart, anything? A Goodwill.
Pretty sure gas stations have them.
Geography of the where we were, the station, in relation to... And those are valid points, by the way. I mean, I can't really argue about that. I mean, I suppose I could have gone down to, like, the nearby, you know, tobacco paraphernalia store and bought some sort of pot shirt or something. But,
yeah, that probably would have been better.
Because that would have actually probably been the closest locale. But the thing was, is that this was all downtown, and there was really no place to go and do that. It just, the city wasn't built that way, and we were on a certain time limit, and I probably didn't have any money with me on that day either. We had to go. It was like 6 blocks, basically, from where we were, you know. So, and I suppose I could have also grabbed a jacket, but it was hot out. I didn't really want to do that either. So, although I wish I would have, and that once as soon as I got there and saw the crowd, so.
So, I only have one story that reminds me of. I've mentioned before on the mics that as a teenager, my best friend and his girlfriend had a kid. And I was their Lamaze coach. So I went with them to the hospital. Apparently, Julie's never heard this story, but...
No, I haven't. And
what a weird choice
is your Lamaze coach, but okay.
Well, I was their best friend. I was the one with the car. Okay. I was the one that actually drove them to the hospital when they had the kid.
We're pretty sure he was the father, too.
And when they actually had the kid, he came out and his family asked him, who's it look like? And he said, Wayne.
Yeah.
But
hair and everything.
Weird.
But anyway.
That's a ginger bar of soap.
Yep.
I was their Lamaze coach. I was there with them. We went every week to the hospital because that's where the classes were.
Oh, God.
And I'm there one day, and I'm kind of walking around the hospital area between class, and I'm getting really dirty looks, and I can't figure out why. So then I go into the bathroom. I use the bathroom. I look in the mirror, and I realize I'm wearing my Grim Reaper in training shirt. As I'm walking around the hospital, when we go in the emergency room to get to the area that we are going for the classes.
That's sad.
That is awesome.
That was teenage me.
Teenage you.
Wayne's Lamaze confessions.
I got a bunch more here for you, Wayne, but Julia, let's get to you.
Okay, what do we want to hear, though?
I don't know. You tell me. What do we want to hear?
Okay, I'll talk about the lesbian surprise. How's that?
Okay.
Sounds f-ing fantastic.
It's not.
Say it slowly.
So this actually happened very recently. It was 2 weeks ago. We were going out for a bachelorette party for a friend at work, and she didn't want to go to the east side to look at, like, boobs. So we're like, we should go see.
Why not?
I know. That's what I said. So we went and saw a drag show.
Let me explain this for anyone who's not from the St. Louis area. The east side is a colloquial reference to specifically a few little towns in Illinois that are on the east side of the Mississippi River. Because Missouri and St. Louis in particular have fairly strict laws, and so you really can't have strip clubs.
No, you can't.
But Illinois, especially in these towns, like Sauget and whatnot, have very, very loose laws.
And so when somebody says they're going to the East Side, they mean that they're going to a strip club or a pretty debauched bar. Right. So continue.
And not all of them are the greatest.
Right. But I just wanted to explain what you mean by going to the East Side.
So she didn't want to go to the East Side. So we decided to go to a local drag show. And I had had another friend whose bachelorette party was at a drag show. So we went to the one that I'd already been to. And it's called the Gray Fox. And they call it the Gray Fox because it's usually older gay men dancing around on a stage. And it's relatively entertaining for females. So we show. Yeah, I don't know. I like I said, I would have much rather gone to the East Side. Believe me.
You lost me. I've checked out.
I think because they sing show tunes.
Go on again.
we show up to this place after eating, and we're sitting there and we're looking around, and I realized that instead of guessing whether these were men dressed as women, I was guessing if they were women dressed as men. And then it turns out they changed the show on us, and it was supposed to be a drag show, but it was actually a lesbian variety show. And I saw
was
so
the Victor Victorious?
And they called them drag kings. One of them looked like Justin Bieber, and she grinded all up on my stuff on stage, which was really weird. And like I said, I am all cultured. I don't mind the stuff, but when it's a surprise, I think it's worse.
I love in the middle of this show, in the middle of this episode of all episodes, we get the phrase, I'm all cultured.
Well, you know what I mean?
Being said by the person that wanted to go to the East
Side. That much grammar.
Well, you understand what's
this
I mean?
Episode about a failed trip to the East Side that ends with a lesbian surprise. Well, so, and with that proper grammar and everything.
That's my kind of culture, goddammit.
After Pat giving a speech about the importance of pornography.
Yes.
With the American flag and national anthem in the background. Chicks dig me with the skirt.
And broads.
And the broad. A failed lesbian trip.
I can't wait to see what comes next.
We get the middle of this. Well, obviously, I'm all cultured.
Well, I mean, I go to things, and I don't mind. I go to things. You know what I mean. I obviously go to drag shows. I don't have problems with the gays. It's like my
things.
Okay, I'm used to seeing lesbians, I guess is a better explanation of what I'm trying to get at. So anyway.
So is Pat, but they're usually on a computer.
Well, the word.
I think if you'd use the phrase, I'm open-minded.
Okay, fine. I'm open-minded.
I don't think it would have.
But anyway, I went there to see show tunes being done, and I had a rather large hula hooper, if you can imagine that, and a rather large burlesque dancer, a very creepy singer who tried to sing Carmen, and I am a singer, so it absolutely destroyed my ears. It was like a lesbian variety show that we were not expecting. I learned how to tape back boobs. We were talking about this at dinner. What a great dinner conversation. Where they tape back their boobs and it splits their skin in between their boobs. And I'm like, I did not go to this bachelorette party to learn about this.
Yeah, it's amazing the things they actually do get away with in St. Louis with the restrictions there. Like when I was at Wizard World, they had a group there that was advertising, because they were doing Wizard World, they were doing a comic book strip burlesque show right down the street.
Nice. That was in Collinsville, dude.
That's
right. Illinois.
They were doing a performance of this right down the street from where Wizard World was.
Where was Wizard World?
It was downtown St. Louis.
Oh, it's not really? It was on this side of the river? There's a burlesque club in Wizard World.
We've got three of them.
True burlesque it's somewhat titillating, but there's no nudity.
Yeah, there's nipples.
Everything's covered, so that's the
point. Yeah, so needless to say, we had surprise lesbian variety show.
Lesbian surprise. Dan?
I say, who's going to follow that?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I don't have a huge number of stories. I can tell you a few kind of anecdotes from my life.
Mm.
But when it comes to dating, relationships, sexuality, I don't have a lot of stories that have comedic value or shock value or whatever. I can tell you one of kind of the interesting little tidbits of my life is I have never in my life asked a girl out. I have been in 7 serious relationships, obviously the 7th being my marriage to Carla, But I had been in seven serious relationships. Maybe it's been six. I'd have to redo the math. I can't remember. But the point being that multiple serious relationships, and I have never once in my life asked a girl out. In every single one of those situations, the girl asked me out.
That's interesting, you know, because I'm actually the exact opposite. I was always the instigator as far as the relationships would go.
But back in your day, Chris, it wouldn't have been proper if it was anything else.
Yeah, didn't they give you a dowry?
Actually, that is partially true. In the 80s in Minnesota, the girls didn't do the pursuing. But it was actually the one girl who actually did pursue me. That's the relationship that I ended up with. That was the one successful one that I ever actually had.
I just kind of ran through the names while Chris was talking about something. And it was five girls.
I go to things.
It was five serious relationships. And then number six would be Carla. Or if you just do any relationships at all, there's only one girl that I dated briefly. I'm the sort of person that whenever I go into a relationship, I don't rush it, but I take them pretty seriously. I mean, dating is not something I do casually. I won't say I'm not super serious. I'm not like, hey, let's plan our wedding and have kids on the first date. But
creepy.
I do kind of see this as sort of thing where what we are doing is a dry run for a committed lifelong relationship. And so I don't casually date. There's only one girl that I dated for just a handful of dates. Every other girl I've been with, I have been with for a relatively long period of time. And
you do realize that those girls that you said you didn't plan the wedding on the first date had already planned your wedding and pictured your babies and named them.
I fully believe that is true. With one, I fully, truly believe that is absolutely the case.
So I never really did the dating around thing either. The closest I ever came was I had one relationship I was trying to end. I always lose track of which stories I have and haven't told on the mic.
I've got three here you haven't told.
I'm pretty sure I've told the story about the drug dealer.
Those are the three I've got for you that you said you've not told.
None of those are this.
Okay.
I think I've told the story before about the drug dealer where we went out and we stole like street signs and cones and things on a date. Well, when it was finally time to end it, because I found out that she was a drug dealer, I didn't have the balls to actually call her and break up.
I wouldn't either.
So then I ended
up... As a man with four guns, one of which is an assault rifle, I don't know that I have the balls.
So somebody that I had previously dated ended up reaching out to me, and we got back together right at the end of that. So I'm trying to find a way to break it off with this girl, and she calls me up and asks if I'm coming up that night. And this was during the time when my friend and his girlfriend was pregnant. It was before the baby had been born.
Yes, yes.
So when she calls up, I give the excuse, I can't right now, I have to head to the hospital. You know, she's in labor. And then when she called back later, oh, it was false labor.
Oh, jeez.
I faked my friend's labor to get out of a date because I didn't know how to break up with this person.
Okay.
That's crazy, Wayne.
Whoa, what was that?
Sorry.
What the hell?
Whoa.
That was crazy, right?
No.
We're going to keep a picture.
We're not going to step right by that. Okay, so you just took a picture of your dick.
Okay? I did, actually, and it's buddy.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of crazy. Yeah.
But say this is crazy.
This is going in the nuclear football, Pat.
I had the volume down. I didn't think it would work.
What did you just take a picture of?
His dick.
Sitting around this table with probably no less than a dozen, maybe two, three dozen people in the history of doing this show, I guess, especially if we start including people that have like locally guested. I've seen a lot of bizarre things get done around the table. I've never seen anyone pause in the middle of a show to take a picture, unless what they were doing was taking a picture of the podcast for the purpose of putting it like on social media to say, we're recording. Here's a picture of us all sitting around the mics. You're by yourself in Iowa. What the hell did you just take a picture of?
This is a picture of my penis and as it's recording.
Yes.
No.
I don't doubt
that. You pegged it quite appropriately. That's exactly what I took a picture of. In fact, here, I'll even send it to you.
I don't have a camera on. You did not take a picture of us recording.
I took a picture of me recording. Not you guys. You're not here. I can't take a picture of you guys recording.
So I'm pretty sure I've told the story of the lesbian witch before.
I like where this episode is going. It's got a very lesbionic theme, and I think that's, well, it's not been good yet, but maybe you can you can pull it out for us, Wayne. Not that way, Chris.
Damn it.
I'm pretty sure I've told this before, but Julie probably hasn't heard it, so at least it'll be new to someone.
Exactly.
So, again, back in high school, there was a girl I liked, and I had been building up the courage to ask her out for weeks.
Did she have black hair with black lipstick?
Yes.
No black eyeliner. At the time. No, she wasn't too gothy.
Okay.
That was Wayne at that time. He was one who had black
lipstick. We didn't have any goths. I would have been all over that. But we didn't have her. I was the closest we had. Okay. As you'll tell later on when we get into the later stories. So my friends knew that I was interested in this girl. I was going to ask her out. And I finally get up the courage and I ask her out, and she replies back, "It's not that I don't like you. It's just that I'm gay." So I reply back, "Okay, I'm going to go jump off the roof now." So I go into my next class, which is accounting.
It's not you. It's your penis.
Well, no, I go into the next class. It's just certain parts of my accounting class. And I'm sitting there talking to my friend. And I tell him that I ask her out. And I tell him what she said. And he's like, he just kind of busts up laughing. And I come to find out, he knew.
Because
she had broken up with one of his other friends for that reason. I'm like, why didn't you tell me?
That was the problem.
Yeah. I'm like, why didn't you tell me? He's like, because I wanted to see how you'd react to it. You son of a bitch!
That's so mean.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, I would have hugged you. Like, I would have felt bad for you, so I would have hugged you.
Oh, but that would have been totally interpreted the wrong way had you
probably
done that. Then he would have said, oh, well, then what are you doing this weekend?
I have a semi-funny, I think it's funny, from work. So I'm obviously I'm a very caring person, and I don't like hurting people's feelings. And I had been working in my position where I deal more with clients for about 6 months. And we have this guy who is a client of ours who is very nice, but I don't necessarily know if he's 100% there, or if he's got super duper social anxiety. He's very strange. We'll just put it that way. And he has a lot of money. We'll just put it that way. He's got a lot of money. I know, I deal with all of his entities. And so he came in and he was kept talking to me about weird stuff. And then he left. And then 2 days later, he calls on the phone for his accountant and I transfer it. And then he calls back like 5 minutes later. And I'm like, do you need to speak to your accountant again? And he said, no, I actually want to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, shit. Here we go. And so he proceeds to ask me out on a date on the phone. And he's a client. Okay. And I'm like, you know, I explained to him, like, I'm in a serious relationship. I'm very flattered. And, you know, I'm trying to be, like, as extremely nice as I possibly can. And he's like, oh, okay, all right. And he hangs up. And everything's been awkward ever since, obviously. But 2 weeks later, I find out from the accountant that he changed his last name because he thought that's the reason why I wasn't dating him.
So he legally changed his last
name.
I'm not gonna ask you that. About to say, what did he change it to? But we don't want to disclose his identity.
We'll just put it this way: it's not much better. Not that his last name was terrible anyway, but it's not like he changed it to Smith.
But let me ask you something: is there ever anyone in your life where you have decided not to date them, and the reason has been their last name?
No, my ex was Schnurger.
Schnurger.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Like, I don't care about last names. One of my female coworkers is like, maybe you just shouldn't be so nice. And I'm like, how can you be mean to somebody who's asking you out on a date? I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, women find it very easy to be that way. So.
I'm not. I can't. Like, I think I'd go out on pity dates, like, if I wasn't with anybody. Like, I don't like turning people down.
And that is why you should always tell your children to just have the courage to ask people out. Because there are people that will do pity dates.
Yeah.
Well, or do my route. Just don't ask people out.
And that too.
And like I said, for me, it worked out. I've dated 7 times, 6 of them serious, and never asked a girl out. That's the thing, is you always people talk about getting friend zoned or getting rejected or stupid pickup lines or whatever. I've never had to deal with any of that.
He just uses ether aftershave, so
yeah, that's really
right. It all works out.
Yeah. I was the friend zone back in high school.
Venom.
It was awful.
It's 100% snake venom.
I had a really long-term boyfriend that started out in the friend zone, and then we dated for like 5 years.
And he crossed over?
Yeah, he did.
That is a rare achievement, so kudos to him. That's not...
Chris?
Yes, sir?
I'm going to kick this over to you.
Okay.
Do you remember what the other story was?
Well, I have 2 fire tower stories. One would be a date-related fire tower story, and one would be a strip-spin-the-bottle fire tower story, which is not nearly as exciting as it sounds. It's more of a story of the one time I got lucky, which also is not nearly as exciting as it sounds.
You have 5 kids.
Good
you got
God.
Lucky ones?
I don't know. I hope I only have 4.
Oh, you have 4 kids.
I think. Well,
I hope you for? Maybe this fire tower thing paid off.
All right, so, Chris, the way you're using fire tower, it almost sounds like
we should have a clue what you're talking about.
Like, yeah, I'm sorry. You're using it like it's a slang term for something.
Is it like the fire tower is in like forest so you can see if there's a forest fire?
Bingo. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there's some out by my parents' house because, you know, we are uncivilized.
Okay. So you mean a literal fire lookout tower. Actually, I thought you were all cultured.
This is a fire lookout tower.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. And it's located way in bump in the woods. And it's the road to get there is basically just kind of two ditches. Because you guys always seem to pick on my misfortune. I'll tell the spin the bottle fire tower story. So back in high school, I was in the drama club, and this was some like after hours drama party, or it was some sort of drama club type hangout thing. And we'd all been, of course, we'd been drinking and everything. And so we decided to go out to the fire tower, and I was driving this one time, and one of my first vehicles I ever had was a brown colored 1974 Nova, which was
sexy.
Let me tell you something. If I could get that car back, I would in a heartbeat. I loved that car. That car, you had
He's talking about a Chevy Nova and a fire tower story.
Well, because he could on it and no one would
would not know the difference. The suspension in the back was very bad, and so when I was talking about this road, I wasn't kidding. Right. We were like driving like halfway up the road of this fire tower, and I had to kick everybody out of the back because I was kept scraping the bottom, kept bottoming out. And also this was back in the era they were just starting to get people to wear seatbelts, and so the seatbelts had to be plugged in. You know, had to be locked so you could actually start the car. Which, of course...
I don't remember that. I guess I'm not that old.
We were born.
Yeah, you're not that old. Yeah. Back in the... it wasn't a law back then, and so... But they
I've
were...
just been in
they
70s were moving cars. Towards
this. This was just after they stopped using seatbelts made out of piano wire. No, and...
What? No. I don't know what kind of court-ordered vehicle you had, Chris.
I know.
But I'm pretty sure that there has never been a car that you had to have the seatbelt plugged into to be able to start
especially
it.
Especially a Chevy Nova.
I guarantee you.
You may have had one that you had to plug in and blow into a little tube to get it started. Nope. But I'm pretty sure that that was not a... I think that was an aftermarket feature.
And the tube was attached to a guy named Bill.
This Nova, you had to have both seatbelts. Must have had some sort of weight sensor or something because... I would have to make the passenger lift themselves up off the passenger seat so I could start the vehicle. Because we wouldn't wear the seatbelts because we just didn't do that back then because you were too cool and you were immortal. So, you know, why would you ever do that? So
why they were worried about
this was part of the movement to convince people that they needed to start wearing their seatbelt. That's the reason why.
It was the beginning of click it or ticket.
That's exactly right. Okay, so we're up at the fire tower. We've been drinking. And we decided that it was time to start, you know, playing strip spin the bottle, which is, you know, what high schoolers will normally do back in that area.
Well,
so
there were no chicks there, but...
They're all dudes.
Yeah, it was
all
a sausage fest, but hey.
No, the thing was is that it actually was a pretty even split. So it was kind of like, it was bonus days as far as I was concerned.
Because you could have both.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're going to see a or some boobs.
Exactly. Hey, well, you know what? The advantage in that era was that because blood had been replaced with testosterone, my eyes were laser focused on exactly what I wanted to look at. And so I don't even actually remember. I know that I was one of the guys there, but I could not tell you who any of the other guys were that were there.
Yeah, you couldn't.
Uh-huh. But anyway, so we get through with that whole business. And of course, it's dark out and it's nighttime. It's time to go home. And... So we pack up.
Wait a minute. So we've skipped across the stripping part.
I noticed
part.
That too.
Well, what do you want? I mean, what do
We're
you want?
Play strip poker when it was over.
Yeah, on the way home after the game.
I don't know. What do you want me to say? I mean, yeah, of course, absolutely. I saw, and this is the honest truth. The girl who I was interested in, who I wanted to look at, she was the only one I actually paid attention to when it came time for the actual nakedness, and I was not disappointed. it was spectacular.
You played strip, spin the bottle.
Well, you would do that, but see, what ended up happening is it was taking too damn long, so we just decided, let's just
take off our clothes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then...
There was a drama orgy up in the fire tower. Moving on!
Yeah. Actually, that would have been pretty cool if that actually would have happened.
So the moral of this story is bullshit, but
The point that we already had, and so we so we decided to all strip our clothes off, and then now we got to that was where we went and back to the car. So we're just going to completely gloss over this.
No,
what
because
happened, Chris?
Because, no, here's
you're
the
all
actually,
naked up in the fire tower. What the f*** did you do? Did you sit there and just sort of admire nature?
Unfortunately, that was
just
all that we
were
able
looking
to do?
For fires?
Well, okay, and since has anybody here other than Chris been in a fire tower?
Yes. I have, yeah.
I got shit my pants when I walked up one. Like,
yeah.
I am not really
scared
of heights.
I didn't go all the way up. I
stopped
near the top.
I was so scared.
Well, the other thing is you definitely get your cardio workout getting up to the top.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is when you get near the top, they're usually up on hills, so it's so windy.
It's
the
windy
top is shaking.
Ways. Like, you would never catch me dead just hanging out naked playing Spin the Bottle in one of these things anyway.
But see, here's the thing, is that we actually weren't up in the fire tower when this was going on. We were down in the grass on the ground below. This is actually important to the story. So,
you've just destroyed the story for me. I was with you. I was into the story. I was engaged. I was in the fire tower with you looking at boobs. And then apparently nothing else.
Believe me, I wasn't looking at the boobs.
You know, and nothing else happening. But then now you're saying you weren't even in the fire. Next thing we know, we're not even going to be in a forest. It's actually in the backyard at his house. And it was with the dog.
So anyway, you're in the grass.
Okay,
He was playing Spin the Milk Bone with Fluffy.
And Fluffy lost her collar.
But I found it.
Anyway, Chris.
Anyway, so really. So, no, and I tell
I'm just
that because
make my own up from now on.
You go right ahead.
I'm going to stop listening to your story. I'm just going to imagine something else.
All right. Because this is the actual point of the story. So it came time to get home, and I had curfew then, so I had to be home before my parents got home.
How old were you?
Oh, hell, I don't know. Or I was at least 16 because I was a driver. In fact, you know what? I probably was 16 now that I think about it, because I still had that car, and that was a car I had when I was 16.
Wow.
All right. Anyway,
I have to back Chris up on something.
Oh, God.
Wikipedia supports him on the Nova thing. Novas and all 1974 cars were fitted with weight-sensitive relays within the front seat that prevented the vehicle from being started until the driver's seatbelt had been fastened.
Suck it, you broad.
He may be insane, but he's actually right about this one.
That's right. I told you.
Damn.
The phrase when everybody got into Ernst Taxi was butts up. That was because you had to lift your butt so we could trick the sensor.
Wait a minute. Into whose taxi?
Ernst Taxi. My nickname in high school was Ernie.
Okay. Okay, hold on.
Now we've got
this story. F*** your bullshit. Fire tower, boobs, no whatever bullshit story.
No,
weren't even
boobs.
In a tower story. Let's talk about Ernie.
How did you get the nickname Ernie?
When I was a freshman in high school, and I was in choir, and there were three seniors in choir, and these three guys, I mean, in all seriousness for a second, these three guys were probably
all
three of the
Bert.
Most influential guys in my high school career, even though I only was in high school with them for 1 year, because there were these three seniors that began by starting to pick on me, but then also essentially took me under their wing, and they got, you know, first-time drinking experiences, you know, hanging out with cool people, all of these things. These guys bridged that gap between being the incredible geek that I was when I was a kid to being someone who actually everybody could really get along with and being a pretty decent guy in high school. So,
you know, at this point, I forgot what the we were talking about.
And they also tried to give me a swirly, which was a fun experience in and of itself. So
yeah.
With but so anyway,
they were his best bud. They tried to give him a swirly.
That was when they first started picking me. But the reason why they called me Ernie was just simply because of the fact that they said I looked like one. There was no more evidence to it than that. And then
like
they would
Ernie
chase me down the hall.
One?
Like,
not from Ernie and Bert, but just it's just like a general. I would assume some sort of hick type.
I don't
Ernie.
Know what
Iowa
bothered
thing.
Me that
what
much,
a,
but it's not
a,
Ernie and Bert. It's Bert and Ernie.
What is an Ernie? I mean, if
I have
someone
no idea.
Walked
is
up to
like,
another individual and said, "You look like an Ernie," and they're not talking about the Sesame Street character, I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
I never bothered to question. My best guess it would be like Daryl and his other brother Daryl is probably the closest thing I could think of.
I have before, I guess, I don't know. You look at somebody, wow, your name fits you or doesn't fit you. For most people, their name fits them. I mean, occasionally you meet someone where, I don't know, the name doesn't quite, I guess maybe they just felt like you looked like an Ernie in the same way that you could look at somebody and say, oh, that looks like a guy who would be named
Bubba to me.
You don't look like a dweezil.
Who really does, though?
So, all right, you're in the grass under the fire tower.
So, in the grass under the fire tower, it's time to take everybody home. I get everybody dropped off where they need to be. I get myself home. My parents are not home yet. I am upstairs in my room. I'm just kind of hanging out. And all of a sudden, I realize my wallet is no longer in my pants. So I go downstairs and I'm like searching around trying to find it. I cannot find my wallet. When we left the fire tower, it was dark. Go back into the car with a flashlight. I'm searching around there. I cannot find my wallet. I backtrack my steps. The only place where it would have had the opportunity to fall out was at the fire tower. So of course, you know, I'm like, fuck me. So I have to get my wallet back. And my parents, I knew were going to be home. So this is literally an 80s movie success story for me. I get back in the car. I drive out to the fire tower, which is miles away. I go back up the road. I'm by myself. I go back to the approximate place where I thought we were doing the whole spin the bottle thing. I get my flashlight out. I'm looking around. And sure as shit, I actually find my wallet sitting there in the grass. Here I am in the middle of the night finding it where I should not have been able to find it. So I scoop that up, I get back in the car, I race home, I get home, I beat my parents home literally by like 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm back in the house, you know, shut the car off. The only evidence that I had gotten home past curfew was, you know, if they would have felt the hood of the car. Otherwise, they never would have known.
My parents used to do that, not with cars, but when I was a kid, and it's funny because I'm now a computer programmer, and apart from role-playing games, my biggest hobby is video games. I spend pretty much most of my day messing with electronics. When I was growing up, my parents were concerned that by spending too much time with electronics that I wouldn't develop enough other interests, that I just become a couch potato, I wouldn't develop creative interests or whatever. Are they right, wrong, and different? I don't really know, but it's just kind of ironic how my life turned out. But the point being that as a result, we had an hour and a half of what they called screen time. Now, a screen could be a computer, a TV, video game system, didn't matter. I had an hour and a half of a day total. So if I watched a half hour TV show, I had an hour left. If I want to sit down and play a video game, Wasteland or something, you know, an hour and then it's over. I'm done for the day. I cannot be on anything anymore. Sometimes they give us options like if you do this or that chore, you can earn more screen time.
We do that with our kids, too.
But they would come home. And, of course, these were CRTs. And the back of a CRT gets really freaking hot. For anyone who's not familiar with the abbreviation, a CRT is a cathode ray tube, which are the older style of televisions, you know, the stuff prior to the modern LEDs, LCDs, plasmas, whatever. But the backs of those things would get really freaking hot. And so what we would do is we'd be sitting there while my parents were gone. And this is the funny thing. Most people when they're in high school or college or whatever are out doing what Chris is doing. They're out getting naked under fire towers or whatever it is he was doing. And the stuff that I was doing was like, the parents are gone. We're going to be all crazy and wild and watch a sitcom. You know, I'm going to be out till 3 a.m. with my friends, and in the middle of the night, we're going to be playing a role-playing game. But before my parents would come home, we would take a wash rag and wipe down the back of the TV because it would instantly cool the whole thing off. So whenever they came home, the TV would be completely cold, even though it had been on just seconds before.
You know what, though? I did the same thing, though, with my, you know, Pat was talking about porn earlier, when I would found my dad's videotape stash. When I put it in the, this was all, you know, this is also a bit of a lost art form.
Yeah,
you
put that tape, I know where you're going.
Yeah, you put that tape in the VCR, you have to hit that counter at zero. So you know where to get it back to so that you can't get busted later on when he goes and pops that tape back in
and
there.
And here's the wondrous irony. As an adult, you pretty much know that you don't pay that much attention to it.
Oh, not
it's
at
like
all.
You didn't necessarily have to get it right back to where it was. As long as you're still in the same scene, you're good.
Yeah.
Well, but you don't know that when you're a kid.
Well, that, let's say you know for a fact it's completely off. You're going to be thinking, man, where did I leave this videotape? And what's the first thought in your mind? Is it going to be, I should really go ask my 14-year-old son whether he was watching my porn tapes that supposedly I've hidden so well he can't find them?
Exactly.
Obviously, that's not how this is going to go down.
Yeah.
But like I said in the beginning of the story, though, it wasn't nearly as exciting. It was this, although Julie's body was spectacular at that age. It still is, but...
Whoa, 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 fuck up.
Your wife
this was
there?
About Julie?
Oh, yeah, she was. Hell yeah.
You
I told
son
you.
Of a bitch.
I told you there was one girl I was looking at, and that was her, man.
And it he wasn't staring at her boobs.
So yeah, he was.
No, he wasn't. No, well, he said he was staring south.
You know, a little context would help here, asshole.
The story.
That's not critical to the story. God
damn it.
The girl I'm currently married to.
And I love the fact that
I first
this was
met playing strip he poker says, back
yeah,
or
yeah.
strip spin
Mother
the bob, whatever they're doing, strip burn down the forest.
I love how his definition of this was an 80s success movie type of a story, and what he was referring to was the fact that he's able to go get his wallet and get home before his parents.
Yeah, not like
not that he like went down on his future wife, you know, because she was naked under the fire tower. No, it's because they were all home. That was all, you know, whatever. The exciting part of it was I had to go find my wallet.
Which like, I did
Ferris
find it.
Bueller type way.
Chris.
It's exactly. That was my Ferris Bueller moment. I mean, yeah, I sure suppose, yes, it could have, there could have been more elements to make that a more successful evening. But hey, you know, the way I looked at it, it all worked out pretty good for me in the end.
Chris, we have another one here for you because that's not the story note that I've got for you. But we'll come back to that. Wayne, there's one where all you gave me was a title and you said it's not a terribly good story, but the title alone, I have to hear it. Mandy the Lifeguard.
Lifeguard Mandy.
Lifeguard Mandy.
So there was a time period.
This already is a better story than what Chris told.
So, there was a time period where I had I had someone else's computer at my house. She was heavily into like IRC and all the chat stuff. For a very short time, I got on some of like the chat rooms.
Mm-hmm. And so you like this chick, I assume?
She was just a friend.
Yes,
I liked her.
The soap baby friend kind of way.
Yeah.
No, not the same person.
I'm going to. What kind of car do you drive, Mandy?
No. Uh-huh. And this wasn't her PC. This was a friend. Yes, I liked her. No, nothing ever happened.
Okay.
But I had her PC and I was chatting on like IRC and all of that because she had a better computer than I did. And after a while, you kind of get to know the people that are on there. And most of the people that are on there are idiots. So I find myself talking pretty regularly with someone who goes by the name Lifeguard Mandy. And we get into these private conversations over there. And we're talking pretty heavily about if the world ends, she'll be hiding off in her bunker somewhere. And at the time I was working at Six Flags and I was like, we got to talk about, you know, if she had a doll, it would be Lifeguard Mandy. And it's like, I would be Store Clerk Wayne. And it's like, would Store Clerk Wayne be allowed in Lifeguard Mandy's dungeon?
Wayne's awkward confession.
What the f- You are blowing my mind right now.
So I wish there was a video here. Because these mics are on these metal tripods. And as Wayne got to the dolls, Julia grabbed onto the sides of her mic stand.
And just held on.
Like they were the bars of a roller coaster. Like, if her seat had a seatbelt, she'd have just put it on.
I didn't know that this existed.
It's like, so if there was a doll named Lifeguard Mandy and a doll named Clerk Wayne, and Julia's just, she reaches up and just grabs on.
So.
I'm so scared of what's going to happen.
This led to me actually meeting her. She had, she was going on about how.
Hey, want to see my dungeon? Yeah.
So she was going on about how.
How did this go wrong?
She was going on about how she didn't like theme parks. I'm like, well, you've just never been there with somebody that, you know, works out there that doesn't do the ride. So we arrange a date.
Oh my God.
So I go, I pick her up. She's cute, but nothing really amazing.
And
so we go out on this date. We're going to Six Flags. It's really awkward. Like, we have all this flirting online. We have all of this online chemistry. In person, it is not working. So right around 1 o'clock or so, she goes off to the bathroom, comes back. Her phone rings like 5 minutes or so later. And it's like, okay, I see where this is going. And she's like, oh, my sister's babysitter has to go. We have to go home right now so I can, you know, go to... So she finds her way to...
The escape hatch phone call or the rescue phone call or whatever
exactly.
It's called. Yeah.
She gets her rescue phone call and then I never see her online again.
See, I've been on plenty of bad dates and I've never used that. Well, not plenty. I don't want to say that because I've never had to do an escape.
To the best of my recollection, I have never... Now, I have been in other situations, not dates, where I've had people do that. This isn't relationship related, but
when I was at a Lord of the Rings marathon that was being hosted at a friend's house, there was a guy there who was kind of a fringe member of the group, was not even vaguely well-behaved, was a really, really bad person in a lot of ways. And for whatever this punchline's worth, is now dead. He was murdered by his brother.
Oh, yeah.
And,
wow.
Yeah. If you want the story, he'll play someplace dark. But while we were there, he, for no reason, I mean, this guy was just, he was nuts. He was out of his mind. And for literally no reason, and I mean literally no reason, other than it was something to do, he decides to start trying to pick a fight with me. I'm freaking carrying a gun at the time. Then when I wouldn't fight him, and fortunately he didn't escalate, except for that's not going to end well, then he starts trying to pick a fight with Carla. So at
Wait,
this point,
a dude trying to pick a fight with a chick?
And wow. I'm like, first of all, she'll kick his ass because she's actually a trained boxer and kickboxer and spent like her entire college career like working out all the time. And I mean like serious working out all the time, weightlifting and all that stuff. I mean, she'll kick his ass, but like if she doesn't, the point is it wasn't going anywhere good. So I sent a text message to Mike and I said, I need you to call me right now and just play along with anything I say. I'll explain later. I don't remember. It was to that effect. It was shorter because it was a text message. It was to that effect. So he called me and I addressed him as if he was my boss and started saying, really? Huh? All three went down at once. Yeah. Yeah. I'll see. Well, have you tried calling Christian? Oh, he's not around. Well, I'm at a party right now. I could leave. I mean, really? Okay. And I just got faking this phone call and finally, well, I got to go. Problem at work. So I've done it in other social situations, but I have never used the escape call on a date.
That was the only experience I've ever had.
I've always been of the mind that if I'm going to go on a date,
I'm going to see it through to the end.
I'll at least see it through to the end. And then if it's a bad idea, I'll deal with it later. I'm not going to be so tacky as to have someone call me or text me or whatever halfway through to
honestly
get me
this
out.
Was going so awkward. I was glad she had the escape hatch.
Well, you know, when your relationship is based on if your doll and my doll would be cool in a dungeon,
together.
I liked where it was going. There was a lot of potential in that one. I think we could make
if you're
a
soap baby and my soap baby.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a trilogy in that.
If only so we had never met in person.
I've actually got one
good.
Better than that.
Yeah.
As far as using like the escape phone call kind of method. I remember this was back in the late 90s. This took some effort. I was working here in St. Louis, but I was going home that weekend. And I during that weekend, I was going to be seeing somebody that I didn't necessarily want to see. It was a friend of mine. We'd been on the outs and we were whatever, some bullshit. This is habitual with this person. And it's like, so we were supposed to get together. And I'm like, I really don't want to do this. So at the time where I was working, we had pagers. At least in this system, you could go in from a computer and send a pager message to the pager number, but you could also schedule it. So Friday at work, before I left, scheduled pages to be sent to me on the Saturday when I knew that we were supposed to be getting together, like around that time, so that I could literally, I had my pager escape hatch and I used it too. So right about the right time. I sent like three or four of them, like at like 15 minute intervals. So right at this clock where it came up, I'm like, oh, it's like a work page and they know I'm in Springfield instead of in St. Louis. This must be bad. And like punched out. It was awesome. That's planning.
Yeah, I've only used like a person as an escape whenever I had a creeper at a casino with my tattoo. Like that was probably the only time I actually had to use. I seriously used a random guy. Like, mm-hmm. Like I was like, this guy looks way normal than the creeper who keeps asking me to touch my tattoo and has been staring at it for 15 minutes on my back. Mm. Hey, dude, you're my boyfriend for 2 seconds. So I like, grab this guy's hand and he's looking at me like I'm some kind of crazy because here's this chick just holding his hand now, trying to get this creeper away. And then once the guy walked away, I had to explain why I was grabbing this guy's hand.
I had something like that happen to me when I was in high school. We had a lower parking lot and then an upper parking lot.
and whoever it was that was giving me a ride at the time, I never had a car in high school. It was either Tim or Chad, but one of them was giving me a ride, and I was up there waiting for them so I could leave school. And some girl walks up to me and says, "Just pretend you're my boyfriend." Apparently there was some guy that she really did not like or something like that. And so she would just say, I don't even remember what I talked to her about. It was like the most random non sequitur, nonsensical conversation.
The correct response to that is you just kiss her.
You just kiss
her. Well, I was thinking something else.
Okay.
But yeah.
Or you just start a fight with her. You betcha.
No, let me tie that back to my prior little anecdote about saying I never asked a girl out. There are two reasons for that. One, I will admit straight up, I am a huge freaking chicken about that kind of thing. I'll admit up.
I'm not.
That Now, in my adult life, I got a lot more confident, but through most of my life, I was way too shy about that kind of thing.
Same here. When I look back, that was the one thing I wish I would have realized when I was younger, that it really doesn't matter to just ask.
Yeah, totally. But I did not. But what also figured into that was my birthday fell right on the line for school entry in the state of Missouri.
Oh, they put you in young.
And so what happened was they took me to a facility to do an intelligence test. And I don't to this day remember what all they had me do. The only part of the test I remember was I do remember they asked me to identify animals. They would show me little toys and ask me what they were. I remember one of them was a giraffe. That is literally all the test I remember. But they did an intelligence test on me and put me into school a year early. So I was a year younger than everyone else around me. So when I got to junior high and guys and girls are starting to get interested in each other.
You were too young.
I'm still a kid. I had no interest whatsoever. And what's funny.
I was interested in first grade.
Funny here is I guess I'd say I blossomed late. But for me, I guess it seemed to blossom normally. I mean, I started getting interested in girls about 13 or 14.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like 5 or in the womb or whatever was when Chris got you.
I was 6 or 7 because it was first grade.
Yeah. I had no interest in girls until I was actually in early puberty.
It's okay. We didn't give a shit about you guys until we were 12, too.
Yeah. And well, here's the thing, though.
I didn't care about you at that age.
Yeah, but she didn't actually like you.
So when I got into junior high,
you know what I mean?
The hottest, most popular girl in the school. A girl named Dawn, no, not Chad's wife, it's a different Dawn. She had a massive crush on me. And she was like following me around and fawning over me and trying to flirt with me and ask me out. And I just had zero interest in this girl. I mean, just none. To me, she was an annoyance. She kept after me for some time, finally gave up. Then her friend, who is the second most popular girl in the school, starts doing the same thing. They obviously, after doing this for a while, give up, move on. It's the next year that I hit puberty and suddenly realize what the hell I just did. And by this point, I am entirely too chicken to go back and do anything about it.
Yep.
And so I literally did not have a girlfriend until I was 20 years old.
You kind of see why I didn't ask people out as you hear the stories of the times I actually did. So
one's a lesbian. Yeah. The other didn't want to be in your dungeon with a doll.
Yeah, no dungeon.
So I get up the courage to finally ask this girl out that I'd liked in a little while. So I start off, I go out, I get a rose. I bring her a rose. I hand it to her to start off the conversation. She's like, "Oh, that's so sweet. My boyfriend doesn't even bring me roses." Oh,
Abort.
Yeah, I'm just really oblivious. That's my problem. Is like people will hit on me and I won't realize it, and I just think they're being friendly, and then I start a conversation with them and then they take it the wrong way, and then they're constantly calling me or texting me or something, and it's really creepy. That's what would happen to me.
I'll tell you right now, I'm not here to pass any moral judgment on the issue. This is just how the world works. If a pretty girl gives, it doesn't even have to be a lot of attention, but more than a little attention to a guy.
Yeah.
And the guy reciprocates and keeps that going, they're going to take it the wrong way.
Yeah, that's and I realize that. I'm just a really friendly person. It doesn't matter who you are, I'm going to talk to you and be friendly. And so I guess I just grew up that way. And so it took me a really long time to realize sometimes that they liked something more than I did.
If you're a pretty girl, I'm not recommending that you be just like a bitch to everyone around you.
No, because you certainly
do need to kind of be polite, but abbreviate it.
Be judicious in the way in which you pass it around.
Use your words as if each one of them cost you a dollar. You know, it's you have to be very short in the way that you deal with things because it is going to be misinterpreted. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's the way it is.
Yeah, that's why a guy changed his last name for me. Because I'm too nice.
Chris, I just have one note here. It's a placeholder on a story for you. I don't know if I can even use this word. So, fingering?
Wait, say it again.
That was because
you broke up. You broke up, so I didn't hear it.
The way you went,
Are you serious, or did you really not hear the word?
No, I really didn't. I really didn't hear what you said.
Fingering. Fingering.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Fingering.
Okay. All right.
So for our second date, this is...
I want the recording of Dan saying it and then spelling it out as my ringtone for Dan.
No, we should turn it into a creepy Sesame Street skit.
It's me winning the spelling bee.
Could you use it in a sentence? Could you use it in a sentence, please?
Try explaining that term to a Japanese man who doesn't know what that means in Cards Against Humanity. Because it was used under Sticky. And so we had to proceed to explain what fingering was to Japanese.
Well, you see, it's funny you said that because that's actually what the story's about. Oh. Because for those who don't know, I work part-time, it's just a couple nights a week at a local video store. So, you know, you're there to, you know, make it a good experience for the customer, talk to people and, you know, and make them feel welcome. So this one night I'm working. And
so that is where we're getting to that particular verb.
So not the shocker. Wow. Fingering.
So this one woman was in the adult section. No, what happened was so this woman comes up and she's got like two or three kids with her or whatever. And I noticed that one, she had what looked like either some sort of like jewelry stud up by the side of her eye that was like stuck there. And I couldn't see the end of the peg. So I was thinking to myself, either it's embedded in her head or it's actually stuck to her skin. And then also her middle finger was like wrapped just thick with gauze. I mean, just huge, huge wrap around there. So I look at her and I say, I got to ask her, I noticed that thing on the side of your head. I said, is that just stuck there or is it? And she says, no, she says, this is actually embedded in my skin. There's a post that's stuck in there. And I said, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. And she says, yeah, she says, and she holds up her hand with the bandaged finger. And she says, it didn't hurt nearly as much, you know, as this did. And I said, oh, well, you know, I noticed that as well. And I thought maybe you had just gotten injured being really angry at people, you know, i.e. flipping them off. That's what I'm thinking in my head. And she said, oh, she kind of chuckled a little bit. She said, no, she said, actually, my days of fingering people are long gone. and I just kind of stood there and I said, all right then. And so I'm talking to one of the other guys at work about it and explain the whole story. And he kind of chuckled and he says, actually, he says, that's what it means around here. When you finger somebody, that means you're giving them the bird, you're flipping them off, you're giving them the middle finger. And I looked at him, I said, are you kidding me? You gotta be fucking kidding me.
Wait, you didn't know that?
Well, no, I'm not originally from Iowa. No, so for me,
no, dude, that's not a fucking Iowa thing. That's fairly universal.
I've never heard something giving them
the finger?
Yeah.
No, I've heard the finger.
Fingering somebody?
No.
Not fingering somebody.
Yes.
No, that's I will actually defend Chris. Well, no, I'm not defending Chris because he didn't know it. That's not just an Iowa thing.
None of the rest of us have heard this.
I'm with Chris on this one. Everywhere I have been in my life, I have heard flipping the bird,
giving them the finger.
I have never heard fingering used except in three contexts. Blaming someone, like I'm fingering him as the culprit.
Yes.
Checking an email address, Wayne, you're probably familiar with fingering an email address. Yeah. And the sexual use. I have never heard sticking up your middle finger to insult someone called fingering.
I think you'll see when this one comes out. I would imagine other people from other regions are going to say that too. Because that I would say for me, yes, it's funny because it's a double meaning. Because, yeah. Yes. But it's like, yeah, it's
I have never heard that.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Julia, you're up, and then we're going to go out on what Wayne says is his best story.
I guess I could tell the creeper story from work. It's not nearly as funny. It's actually kind of scary. So we have this obvious mentally challenged guy. I don't know what he has, but he has a special needs trust. So obviously something's wrong with him, but he's still capable of driving himself around and living in society. So again, I'm really nice to some people. You know, I'm always nice to people. And he came in on a Saturday and I happened to be the only non-accountant there at the time. And so I had to help him with his tax return. Well, we close at 1 o'clock to the public on Saturdays. And this was like 12:15. And so he stands there and talks to me for like half an hour. And I'm still doing my work while he's talking to me because I don't have, it's tax season, I don't have time to mess around. I'm already working like 10 hours overtime. So he's talking to me and finally I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to make the conversations go away. And I'm like, I have some stuff to do. So I get up and I go around and he leaves. Well, like 2 minutes later, I hear the bell ring at the front desk again. And I'm like, what the hell? I know it's this guy. I just know it. And I walk up and sure enough, there he is. And he has to use the bathroom. And I'm like, okay. And I tell him where it's at. So I'm walking around to the different accountants, giving them tax returns, doing various things. I hear the toilet flush like 6 times in like 5 minutes. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? So then it's the last 5 minutes. I finish my timesheet. I bring it to my boss's desk. I do a couple things. And it's like he's watching the time because like 1:58 he comes out of that bathroom when he knows I'm probably getting ready to walk out the office. Okay. So I'm like, this guy's going to murder me in my car. And so luckily, my mom had been meeting me because I had a basketball game that day. So she was standing in the front lobby. Otherwise, I don't know what I would have done because I was there completely by myself. And this creeper was probably going to follow me out to my car. And I had like handed my mom a tax return. I'm like, act like a client for like 2 minutes until this guy leaves. He still didn't leave. He was like flipping through like brochures that he does not give a shit about, like strewn about the front office and everything. And then finally, when I was like, all right, mom, let's go. So I had to give away my cover. He didn't leave the parking lot until me and my mom were in our car and at the stoplight. It was the creepiest thing ever.
So if you think that was the creepiest thing ever.
Oh, geez, I'm scared.
So I've talked before about just what a messed up teenager I was. You know, many, many times. So I'm in a Barnes & Noble and there's a girl in there that I find very attractive. You know, throughout the course, I'm there for like a half hour or so. She's gone around and she's caught my eye. So I was like, how can I introduce, you know, basically make an impression? So out in my car, I've got from a Halloween costume, from a Scream Halloween costume.
Oh, shit.
Not the mask.
I know, but I'm sure.
But I bought it for the full cloak that he wears over it. This isn't like what I have now, which is the very expensive, nice cape and all that. This is a cheap cloth.
Walmart one.
Yes.
Okay.
Walmart.
Oh my
thin
God,
plastic.
Face is amazing.
So I put this on. I grab a piece of paper and I write out phone number, little information. I walk into the Barnes & Noble in the full Scream cloak. I wait until I get back near her. Then I pull the hood up.
Oh my god, Wayne.
I approach her. And I'm like, excuse me. And I handed her the paper that had my best friend's phone number, not mine, on it.
Wayne's awkward confessions.
Oh my god.
And then I turned around. That was all I said was, excuse me. Handed her the paper, turned around, and walked back to the car. Got in. Left.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
You're the creepers I talk about.
Exactly.
Wow. Did she ever call your friends?
No.
I'm not. Okay. No, not that didn't. I'm surprised. I was just curious if there was an epilogue to this. Hell?
So why did you give. Why did you give.
I was creepy. I wasn't stupid. I wasn't giving her my number when I do something like that in public.
We were trying
to call
impress
the police
her.
On me.
She wouldn't have. All you did was hand her a piece of paper. It's not like you had came up to her with a knife.
You knew this was an idea that was going to be creepy and probably going to get the police called on you.
But, yes,
but you still felt
anyway.
This was an appropriate pickup method.
Yeah, I was creepy. I was dumb. I give you that.
Oh,
it's like,
gosh,
wow, this is a really bad idea. It's so dangerous. I'm probably going to get arrested. I should give him my friend's phone number, not mine. This one in marriage.
I also used to randomly just leave his number on people's windshields, too. It's like, hi, I saw you go in. You're kind of cute. Call me.
Damn, dude. That's twisted.
But actually, I got to give you props to that, though, Wayne. That's actually pretty good doing that kind of stuff.
What I always hilarious. Wanted to do but never had the courage to do is I wanted to print up cards that actually had my real number and stand there in the mall and just approach people and say, you know, I had these made up to give to people I found interesting and attractive. And you're the first person today that I found that is worth one of these. Please call me sometime.
Wayne's Awkward Confessions.
But I never had the courage to do it.
Wayne, I don't know what to say.
I would have been kicked out of the mall now, I'm sure. At the time, though, as a teenager, I thought that was a brilliant idea that was bound to get me a date. The mall thing, not the
printing up cards and yeah. handing them out to people at the mall. Was that?
I'm a little speechless.
I think as a teenager, I probably had some wires that were mismatched.
Yeah. Well, how'd you fix them?
He moved away from the lead smelter.
Oh,
that's part of it.
True. He grew up next to a lead smelter. That is not a running joke. That is a truth.
No, I went to school next to one. I didn't grow up next to it. I just went to school next to it.
He was educated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
No, I was a very, very different person as a teenager. And I did do the, you know, go out, get my ear pierced because a girl convinced me to thing.
You know, they always wondered why whenever the kids would go out and play on the playground, they were always licking the metal bars. Oh, my God. I taste so good. Oh, my God.
But no, every time you tell...
It didn't faze them.
You know? For every creeper story you had to tell, that was the thought in the back of my head is...
At least the little bastards aren't misbehaving.
I'm saving up for a time when I was the creeper.
Well, like, and at least the ones I'm talking about probably have mental issues.
Yeah. Julia, I want to do a little bit of role playing here.
Yeah, I want to know how you would have reacted if somebody did this. I want to do a little role playing here.
Let's say you're single.
Okay.
Let's say Wayne's single. Wayne goes to Kinko's or Got Print or whatever and gets a stack of business cards made that have his phone number on it. You're walking through the mall. You've never met this soulless ginger. He walks up to you, hands you a card with his phone number on it, and gives that speech.
What is he wearing? Is he wearing the creepy cape thing?
God, no. Yes. I was going to dress nice.
No, he was wearing his nice cape.
His nice cape. Your his nice button-up cape.
His going out cape. His actually, Sunday cape.
Yes. I probably would have had my trench coat on for it.
Okay. As a teenager... I'm trying to think in teenager Julie.
At that point, I also give you full context. At that point, my hair was dyed black. I had one earring in the, I think it was the left ear, that had, it was like a skull with horns on it. And I usually had a ring of some sort that had a skull on it as
See, that stuff didn't faze me much because, I mean, my brother was part of that crowd. And then I kind of had friends all over different crowds. I had pothead friends, you name it.
What about fangs? Did they phase you?
Yeah, no, they didn't. Where were people like her
when I was a teenager?
I was used to them. I had a lot of friends in different circles.
Well, hey, we haven't gotten to what she would do yet.
But as a teenager at the mall, I would probably have handed your card to a friend and made her call you.
That is awesome. Where were people like her? Because that would have worked. All that mattered was you get the date. It doesn't matter if it's the person you hand the card to.
Yeah, it might not have been my thing, but I'm sure that I could be like, well, maybe this friend. Or I'd play a really mean joke on one of my friends. Who knows? But
because all 25 or so cards that I would have handed out would have had the same speech. You're the first person I found here that was worthy of giving a card to.
I'd probably go, aw, and I'd probably still take it from you, but I probably wouldn't call you. I'd make you feel better.
And that was part of the plan, was the awkwardness. The, what do I do with? Okay, I'll take it. And then you think about it all day.
What is human nature? Somebody hands you something.
You reach out
and take it.
That was part of the plan. And then you think about it all
really
day.
It works really well in Vegas.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Some porn.
It was partially from walking out
you
the
would have thought about that. You would have thought about that all day. You would have told your friends about that experience.
Yeah. But that just wasn't my type when I was in high school. So,
Wayne.
I think I'm going to run this as one episode for a simple reason that I'm not sure I want to drag this one. I'm sorry you tuned in. But I hope you at least somewhat enjoyed some of the stories. We will be back next week with a gaming topic, and we've got some interviews coming up. Go ahead and forget this episode ever occurred. And we will see you next time. Thank you.